Hey everybody, it's Brad Williams and Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by White Cloud e-cigarettes.
We're not saying you should start smoking, but if you already do, awesome. And if you've ever wanted to try an e-cigarette, these are the ones to go with. White Cloud e-cigarettes offers over 20 flavors. That's almost as many as Baskin-Robbins. 20 flavors and 6 nicotine strengths. It's cheaper than other e-cigarettes that you'll see at convenience stores and with much more variety. White Cloud e-cigarettes sponsors comedians. They've been doing it for over 2 years now. They've also sponsored comedy festivals like the Boston Comedy Festival and the Orlando Indie Comedy Festival. If you've ever been curious about trying an e-cigarette, I have. Well, the Fling is the low-cost, no-commitment way to do so. And the Fling offers same-day UPS shipping on orders before 6 p.m. Eastern.
But is there a website?
Customers can go to WCESigs.com. That's WCESigs.com.
But we want to make sure our listeners get them for cheap. So is there a coupon code?
To get 25% off of the order, use the coupon code ALNPODCAST. That's ALNPODCAST at WCESigs.com to get your White Cloud e-cigarettes today. And now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Special bonus episode. Oh man, this is a fun one. This guest, hilarious comedian. You may have seen him on the TV show State of Affairs or Walk of Shame, Blake Shelton's Not So Family Christmas. Huh? Anybody ever seen it? I have. He was great. He also has been in numerous television commercials all over TV. Currently, he's the host of Ellen DeGeneres' Design Challenge on HGTV. He's an incredible host. He's a great comedian, an even better dude. And his name is Jay Monopar. That's right. Jay Monopar is our guest today. And if you want to hear great stories from a guy who's lived some shit, Jay's the guy. Not only are his road stories from gigs fucking crazy, Jay has a story of his first time doing stand-up that trumps any first-time story ever. I don't even want to tease at what the story is. You just got to listen to its entirety on this episode and enjoy. Jay also, we talk about his first time meeting me and our interactions and what we thought of each other, as well as how Ellen DeGeneres handpicked Jay from a slew of comedians and actors to host her design challenge and how that experience has been. Of course, you can check that show out on HGTV, Ellen DeGeneres' Design Challenge, hosted by Jay Monopar. Follow Jay on Twitter at Jay Monopar, MONTEPARE. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. You can come see me. I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona tonight. That's right, baby. Tonight is the first night of 4 nights of stand-up shows at Stand Up Scottsdale in Scottsdale, Arizona. Get your tickets at standupscottsdale.com. Pumped to be here. This is a great city, a great club. Gonna be a lot of fun. Brad Williams is in Dayton, Ohio. That's right, baby. Tonight, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th of May, Brad Williams, Dayton, Ohio, Funny Bone. The Funny Bone in Dayton, Ohio. Get your tickets at funnybone.com and go see our buddy Brad Williams. Of course, get your merch, estoymerchandise.com, estoymerchandise.com, ABLN shirts, mugs, hats are coming soon. Get your merch, wear it, support the pod, wear it to the shows, we'll sign it, get your mugs, drink your beverages out of that, and support the pod. Of course, you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes if you haven't done so already, and rate and comment the podcast on the iTunes page. It takes 2 seconds. Go to iTunes right now before you listen to this episode. Comment, give it a 5-star rating, comment something small just to help us climb the rankings. It helps so much, and we appreciate it. And it affords us to keep having great guests like the ones we've got coming up. Mark Summers is Monday, baby. The host of Double Dare is finally here. We recorded that episode earlier this week, and it's maybe one of the best episodes we've done. The stories are bananas. That's Mark Summers on Monday. Of course, we've got Nick Swartzen coming up, Henry Winkler, Jeff Garland, and Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly. So many great episodes coming up, so subscribe on iTunes. Tell your friends. Tell them that Brad Williams and Adam Ray have a kick-ass dope fucking fresh podcast. What other fucking 90s adjectives you can use to describe us? Tell them to listen at aboutlastnightpodcast.com or on their iPhone or Android device or on Stitcher. You can get the Stitcher app on your phone and get all the podcasts that way. And finally, do not forget, tomorrow night, May 8th, showtime, Brad Williams, his first one-hour stand-up comedy special called Fun Size is premiering on Showtime May 8th. Brad Williams, first hour special, man. This is a big fucking deal. And Brad crushed it. I've already seen it. It's unbelievable. You love him live, you're going to love him on TV. The special hopefully does wonders for him and creates even more Brad Williams buzz, hey, man, is not a bad thing for the world to be on the receiving end of. Brad Williams buzz is... What a fucking funny thing to say. Fun Size is the name of the special. Showtime, Friday, May 8th. DVR that shit. Watch it. Tell your friends. Watch it with your family. That's all the special info. Those are the Twitter handles. Those are the tour dates. That's all the merch info. So now, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special bonus episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, the hilarious Jay Monopar.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
I don't think anyone says I've got the herpes, but the non-weird one.
No, there are weird herpes. Like, I have a friend who's got fucking eye herpes.
Eye herpes?
Yeah, there's eye herpes. I have another friend who has nose herpes, so she goes out.
Are you serious?
Yeah, when she goes out into the world, she can't, if it's too sunny, she's got to wear a hat or put sunscreen on her nose because her
get
nose
out.
Will blow up with nose herpes.
How do you get nose herpes?
You stick your nose in someone's asshole. I don't know
wow.
how to do that. Like, are we recording right now? Is that what's
yeah,
happening?
Yeah, sure.
Whoa.
I mean, we can cut that if you don't want to have you talking about nose herpes because I know you're very
I
clean
don't
cut.
Have them.
Oh, I mean, yeah, we won't. All right, we won't talk about your mouth herpes then. We'll leave the nose
those
herpes.
Those are canker sores, okay? It's inside the mouth. It's not outside. That's the delineation right there.
Yeah, that is always. Everyone's got that front tooth that's got like one thing on their lip.
Yeah.
That they just never address.
No.
And you have to look. You continue. You just like look at it the
yeah,
whole time.
Yeah. How do you not stare at it?
I like when
you
I'm talking to people. If I want to just mess with them, I'll just look just a little above their eyebrows. The entire time.
Oh, so they think they have a zit or
yeah,
a hair
or you
out
look
of place
to their hairline
something like
or something like that, and just it's a power thing. It's like a self-esteem prophecy, power struggle in the conversation.
Oh God! All right, so this is gonna make me sound kind of lame, but you know what? I don't care. I've done enough in my life to make me sound worse.
Jesus, that was dark.
Yeah, we went right into the comic's brain.
Let's go down that path.
I hate myself.
I've done a lot of shit to make people want to know about why I make choices.
No one gives a shit about me anyway. So it doesn't matter.
Well, what I was going to say is I read those books, The Game and like the pickup artist stuff.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did.
You and KT Tatara.
Me and KT, man.
Did you go to the conferences?
We go to the conferences. We talk about negging.
He's using the term.
Oh, but like that's one of the things that they would say to do is like you look at a part of a beautiful one's face and just go, oh, does your nose always do that weird thing?
Yeah. Oh no. All you have to do is throw a little insecurity at somebody,
mm-hmm.
and when I was in high school, there was this group of us that we all read like the Celestine Prophecy. I don't know if you've read this.
What's that one? That sounds way smarter than How to Bang Chicks by some guy that wears a llama on his head.
It's like grade B Scientology. Basically, the main tenets of it are that. You know, there's no coincidences in life. Things happen for a reason. But within each coincidence, there's a power struggle. So every conversation you ever have with anybody, even if it's amicable,
mm-hmm.
it's a power struggle. And people use four different ways of controlling a conversation.
Okay.
And if you learn how to control a conversation, you can manipulate anybody. And if you know what they're using to get it on you, like they use pity or anger or intimidation, you can debunk that and win any conversation just with a sentence.
Wow.
It's fun.
Like what? Like if it's, I mean, give me an example. Like with Brad here real quick.
Okay, for example, if you were intimidating me, right? If you're
Well, obviously, look at me. I'm very intimidating. I'm swole. I'm cut.
Brad, what are you so mad about?
What do you mean? I'm not mad about anything.
Now I just put you on the defensive and I'm winning right now.
Holy shit. What just happened? I gotta go cry in the bathroom now. Well, but then that's pity. And then, because I'd be like, I got to go cry in the bathroom because he just made me fat.
Well, if you come back at me, then I have to come back with to debunk the pity, which I didn't get. I forgot that part. But
I will get it.
Yeah, it's fun.
What's this book called?
The Celestine Prophecy.
Celestine Prophecy. Holy shit.
So exciting.
Look out, small-minded ladies on Sunset.
Dude, with that game book and all that, I used to be a pool boy at the Tropicana, which is the Hollywood Roosevelt.
Are you serious?
Dude, I was a pool boy.
I thought I was never going to meet a real live pool boy.
Oh, exist?
Yeah, and I had
you probably crushed it.
Oh, we were making. I'm telling you, there's so many scams you can do for this thing, like because it's a big hotspot on the weekend.
Oh yeah,
you know, DJs coming and stuff. Yeah. Like that. So I was working that, and the scams are like, you know, you get a certain amount of clientele that comes around during the weeks, and they want to come on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you give them your number, and they're texting you at 4 a.m. to get in there. So you say, yeah, I'll get you in. It's $100 at the door. So they slip me $100. I tell the lady, yeah, she's with me. Come on in, the door person. And then the biggest way to make money is the chairs around the pool.
Yeah.
That's serious real estate right there.
Sure.
So you come in early. You put reserve signs on all the chairs. And then when somebody comes in, can I get that one? And there's not reserve, but you say, can I get that one? You're like, yeah. You know, the guy paid me $200 for that. If you can beat that.
Dude, that seems like a no-brainer. And people... They don't question because they don't know.
No.
Yeah.
Reserved, that word is so placed on any item.
Oh, yeah.
You can put it on a person and people... Also, it's what you can't have that people want, too. People see that and go, that seat looks so dope. I want that.
Oh, it's
you can't
best.
Have it. Well, you can, but how much you got?
You got a little money? Let's go. Dude, I would make like $1,500 a day there. And
based off the word reserved.
Oh, it's great. And then I got to the point where I realized the people that were coming to these places were like... You know, they were like kind of douchey Hollywood lawyer type guys and things like that.
I mean, you just have to say lawyer. We assume douche.
Yeah, but so
and this is coming from the son of one, so I get it.
So these guys, literally what they would do is you'd see like, you know, hot little Asian girls wearing nothing bikinis walking around. And the lawyers would stick their cards in their bikini strings. So they'd be walking around with all these cards of lawyers sticking on their bikini strings. And the lawyers... And some of the like the Hollywood baller guys, they would always have. They thought they were Italian or something. They'd take their money and they'd put it in like they'd roll it in rolls.
Okay,
and they'd have it sticking out of their pockets. So, I was talking to this one kid I worked with, and he used to make so much money. And I was like, dude, how do you make so much money? You know, I was making good money, but he was killing it.
Right.
And he goes, I just ask him for it. I was like, what do you mean you just ask him for it? He goes, just go ask somebody for that money. So I go up and, you know, he was like, yo, man, you just got to ask for it, you know? And I was like, all right, I'll just ask. So I go up to this guy.
So he was Jewish.
Yeah, right. So I go up to this guy, this lawyer guy that was with all these hot girls around him, you know? And I see the roll of money sticking out of his pocket. And I go, hey, I want one of those. And he goes, what? I go, one of those right there. And I point to the roll and he pulls it. He goes, one of these? I go, yeah. He goes, okay, here. And he just peeled off $200 and gave it to me.
What?
I just took it. I was like, great. So I just went around asking people for money because they want to seem like they got their ballers and they're important.
Yeah.
And money doesn't matter to them. You just ask them, hey, can I get 100? Why? Just because I want that thing, man.
Because you're surrounded by puss right now, and I know that you don't want to look lame. So give me $100,
and that makes them feel powerful to be able to drop a couple and not think twice about it.
And we both win because the girls that are hanging around a guy like that, that's why they're hanging around a guy like that, because they want a guy with money. So that we both win. I get the money. They look good. He gets laid, maybe. Who knows?
Now so were you able to make that pool boy job was in what part of your life?
Oh, dude, I was a pool boy from like 28 till 31. And then when I was a 31-year-old pool boy, I'm like, I am a fucking 31.
I was going to say, I thought it was maybe like 15 to 17.
No, I mean, it was so bad. I had to, like, I had t-shirts. Like, they made me wear t-shirts that were like a size, two sizes too small
of course.
For me. You know, so I had to stay
shorts,
in shape.
I mean,
No, but they had like, you know, tennis, like 1970s tennis shoes you had to wear, pull up your socks, God. Wear aviator glasses. You know, you had to play the whole
part.
You
play the part,
You had to play the part.
Have a little zinc on your nose and shit.
It was so bad. So I ended up wearing shirts. Like, I started fucking with them. So I'd start making my own t-shirts. You know, it's like, sexy pool boy. Or like, give me your dough. You know, all this.
So you hit 31 and you're like, all right, I got to fucking.
Well, the worst is when I'm sitting there as a pool boy and then, like, you know, comics, my contemporaries, my peers would come in. Like, I'd be sitting there serving Elijah Schlesinger and Brett Ernst when they were a couple. Like, I'm like, hey, can I get you guys like another slider?
So that's when it really hit home and you're
right.
Like,
yeah.
Because you want to be considered on the same. You get to how many years into stand up were you at that point?
let's see, I'm like 15 now and I'm 37. So that was six, you know, I'm 11 years in, you know, I had my own shows. Like I booked these guys on my shows, you know.
Oh, okay. So now there's a level. Yeah. That's when you're that deep into it and you're like, I want to be on the same.
And I'm touring. I'm a national headliner at the time.
Right.
But I'm still doing it. And then after that job, I would run to the restaurant I worked at, Providence Restaurant, which is a super fancy place. And I stunk. Because it's 115 degrees by the pool, and I'm hustling and pulling chairs out of cabana bedrooms to sell to people for $400. And then I got to go work at this restaurant. So I would just take a shower that was an old apartment complex, and I just would run upstairs. No shower curtains, no hot water, and I would just like jump under there and just hose off and then go serve idiots.
Oh, that's ridiculous. And
then go out and do stand-up.
And here's the thing. Like you said, you as a pool boy, you can make $1,500 in a day, but you know that... And you're probably making more than a lot of comics are.
Yeah.
Like you're crushing it in terms of the money, but you're not going home going, "Wow, I did something today.
I did what I wanted to do."
Today. Right? No, you're like, "Well, I handed suntan lotion to a lawyer. I pretended to flirt with a 55-year-old divorcee. This is not the life I want for myself."
And it's the worst of Hollywood there too. I mean, you see bands. I went into work one day and there was a floater in the pool, like a person OD'd. And they were just floating in the pool.
So not like a turd, like an actual dead person.
No, there's like a dead turd. And yeah, there's a person floating in the pool. And then,
oh my God.
And then you get girls from
that night, there's people partying in the same pool that someone just died in.
They don't know. And,
who cleans up the floater?
Bill Murray comes in. He cleans up floating doo-doo. The police come. They take it up. They swipe it.
That's crazy.
But you get to know a lot about like what... A lot of real Hollywood is it like? I remember Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were there, and when they stayed at that hotel, if they were going to walk from their room to the dining room to eat, they would clear out that entire wing of the hotel, clear out the restaurant, just so they could walk and eat dinner together alone. What a lonely, crazy life!
Oh God,
that you literally cannot have. Just, I mean. It's so weird that like when we're on the road doing stand up, I don't know if you guys do this, but I certainly do. I sometimes just get out of the room and walk just to get out of the hotel room.
Well, otherwise you're sitting in the room and you're like, can I jerk off for a fifth time? Will my penis handle this? Can it take this?
And the answer is no, it will not.
Because
five is too much.
Dude, and the road is the most lonely, decrepit, horrible place to be sometimes. People think it's this glamorous life, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many times can you watch fucking Everyone Loves Raymond reruns in a day? I was at
how dare you, sir?
I was at this, and the creepiest shit happens on the road. Like, I was staying, especially if you ever stay, you know, like a comics house, you know, or the
comics house or a comic condo.
You know, like comic condo.
I did this room in Reno, and I brought Mark out, and he had to stay at the apartment because I told the guy I wouldn't do that. So he was like, "Oh, I'll get you a hotel." And I was like, "I think you were. Always get people hotels." He just was trying to see if he could get away of not doing it.
Sure. Celestine prophecy right there. He's got the power over you.
Yeah, for sure.
So if he gives it to you, that means he's being a good guy and you're taking 1,000% from him and you feel like a shithead.
Oh, because then he tried to get me to go with him to like hand out free tickets all around the city like on the days. And,
like, that's
and
not
I
my
did
job,
it for
dude.
An I'll bark hour my one show. Day just because I was like, oh, fuck it. Like, I want to get out for a minute anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, and then I took it upon as like a personal challenge to be like, yeah, let me see if I can just schmooze these people. And also I was like, oh, I feel like he didn't do any promotion. So now I feel like maybe I need to do this. I did for about 20 minutes, and then I was like, dude, fuck this. If there's two people, that's on you.
Master manipulator.
But Mark stayed in the apartment, and the guy's dog was there, and it was like, it was...
It's nasty sometimes.
Yeah.
So I went up to Tacoma one time. I was doing a club up in Tacoma, and I was staying at the Comics House.
Jokers?
No, that's
Richland, Washington.
I'm not going to say the club.
Okay. Tacoma is south of Seattle, and it's getting better.
Oh,
but
well,
it's...
this was when it was right next to the meth clinic. Do you remember? It moved a couple of years ago.
Comedy, everyone.
Yeah. So
next to a meth clinic.
Well, Tacoma is has a reputation of not... It's not Seattle.
No.
And that's their slogan. Yeah,
we're not
Seattle.
Seattle. And with a frowny face.
Yeah. And a meth pipe.
So I come off the plane. They're supposed to pick me up. No one's there.
Yep.
And then luckily there's like the nicest comic in the world. I don't know if you know Colin Moulton.
Sounds familiar.
Oh, yeah, I know Colin.
Colin, great guy. So he's there. He's like, oh, I'll come get you, man. So he drives like 45 minutes to pick me up, brings me back. He's talking about organic farms and beans he's cooking me.
Nice.
So I get to the thing. He's like, all right, well, there's your bed there. I open the door. It's a bed with black sheets on it. Like, that's the worst
color sheets you want ever.
Like, it's an 80s Coke video, you know, like cocaine. Where, like, where's Kinnison? So there's black sheets on it. They hadn't changed the sheets in about four comics. So there's, like, stum all over this thing. There's shit all over this stuff.
Stum?
Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah, so...
It's not jizz, it's not piss.
We don't know what
it is. It's stum.
So I literally found newspaper, laid it over the bed. Oh. I slept like I was in a coffin the whole time.
So then
they leave me alone. There's nobody there. The guy who even owns the house, he's not there. He's on the road. So I'm all alone there. I got to get to the club myself and all that stuff. So the last night there, I end up like buying... a little bag of pot off the bouncer at the club.
Yeah.
I go back.
By the way, let's just, you know, totally what you do in these situations.
Yeah, you find the bouncer.
Your opening conversation on the way to the club is about beans.
Yeah.
You're
sorry, I'm just setting the mood with the black with the black bedspread.
So like you're at that point, you're like, I need to forget what
everything
is happening right now.
Yeah.
And I don't care. You don't even do any research about who is getting you this pot, right?
No.
You find one guy who goes, I know where to get pot.
I find the scummiest looking guy again.
Yeah. What's his name? Do you remember? What he looks like?
He was a huge redneck in Tacoma. You know, he was like, you know, he had a ponytail that was riding high. It's like, why are you riding your ponytail off the top like a valley girl? But fuck it, you're big. I'm not going to mess with you.
Yeah.
So I
let's score some coke, buddy.
He offered me that. I was like, I'll stick with the pot. Yeah. Really, he did.
By the way, every time Brad pulls up a song that's like appropriate for like what's going on, I'm like, A, I think you got that off YouTube, but it's just being pulled from Brad's iTunes library.
That's my actual iTunes library.
And I also feel like it's part of his like, I don't know, either his like pre-shower mix.
I was just going to say, it's his shower retinue mix, you know? He's in there just scrubbing armpits.
Or he's jerking off to this. Some guys put on music and mute the porn. And I feel like Brad's a mute the porn guy.
Yeah. You know me too well, Adam Ray.
It's the reverse of American Psycho.
Yeah. Oh, so, absolutely. Yeah. And like, and you have no idea how much CK1 I spray on myself.
Oh, my God.
While this song's going on.
Yeah, you go past Picard Noir into CK1.
Damn
maybe
right, buddy.
CKB.
Yikes. Too soon.
So check this out. So I score
get the pot.
The worst Mexican brick weed. You know, it's like it's been stepped on.
Right.
And I go back to the gross comedy house, and I'm looking for something to smoke out of, because I know the guy who lives there smokes. So I'm like rifling through drawers. I'm like looking for apples, anything, a can, nothing. I can't find
anything. Isn't it crazy what you will do and what you will suggest to your brain to smoke out of when you're in that dire of a situation?
Oh, yeah. Copper pipes. Fuck it. Let's go.
But not even pipes. You're probably looking at the corner of like a bed being like, could I just like poke a hole and like
that? Take the plastic coverall off that thing. So now I'm rifling through everything. He's got no tinfoil. He's got nothing.
Ugh.
So I end up going, I'm like, fuck it. I'll go into his room. Maybe he keeps it in his room. So I open up the top drawer underneath this TV.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, there is probably a foot and a half long, huge black dildo.
Yes.
Huge black dildo with the balls on it and everything.
What? With the balls on it?
With the balls. And so I'm like, get the fuck out of here, right? I'm like, I got to take a picture of this.
Sure.
So,
obviously.
So I'm like, but I'm not going to touch this thing.
No.
So,
no.
So I grab a piece of paper. So I grab a piece of paper and I wrap it around. And I pull it up. And this thing is like
Please
heavy.
Tell me you smoked out of this dildo.
I smoked out of it. I carved a cornhole in it. And I smoked
You're
out.
Like, is that a big black bong?
Oh, dude. Is that a dung or a bong? Fuck it. Bong.
It's all right. A dick bong.
So
a dong.
I pull it out. I put it on the table, on the bed, and I flip the, you know, the piece of paper I'm using. It turns out to be the guy's set list that I used.
So funny.
And on the set list is like jerking off. You know, his bullet points are like jerking off.
Which, by the way, a comedian set list is always like the funniest grouping of words.
Yeah.
It's like pancake titties.
Yeah.
It's like all these weird things that you're like, they give you the, you know, tell your brain what to talk about.
The only thing that would make that more perfect is on the set list it said big black dildo. Yeah.
It did. The last thing it said was big black dildo on it. It was the best. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
So now when you hear that bit, you're like, it's true.
It's true. And the worst part was, as I put it on the bed and I go to take a picture, I'm looking through my phone and I'm like, what's that on that thing? There was dried crap.
More stum?
Stum on the big black dildo. I could not. I didn't even smoke pot that night. I was like, I'm just gonna get more paranoid. I'm just gonna go to sleep,
dude. No. That's fucking disgusting.
Oh, dude. Another time I was on the road. I was doing a triple run. You guys ever do triple runs?
Triple runs. Yeah.
Never did, but I remember you were the first person who introduced me to that, and then I just never found myself in a position. But tell people what they are.
So triple run is like this guy. It's kind of one of those things that comics will cut their teeth on, you know.
Yep,
you
absolutely.
Start, you do like
you want a taste of the road, kid. Do a triple run.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you want to terrible taste of the road.
Right.
But it's great because you end up working the worst clubs in the world, terrible bars. And you do, like, you'll go into Washington State, you'll do a gig, do an hour, and they hate you. And then you'll drive 8 or 10 hours just to do another gig. You just roll in, do that gig. So I'm staying at a band house in this horrible place in, like, Idaho or something like that. And the guy who uses the band house, he built the stage at the bar, and that's, you know, part of his payment. Yeah. It's whatever it was. He owed the money, so he's like, I'll build you the bar, and the people can stay at my house.
Yeah.
It was the, so I pull in, it's behind this industrial neighborhood where there's, like, truck stops and all that shit, you know. And for some reason, Classy. It was a nice day, but as soon as I got to where his house was, instantly overcast. I pull into his driveway. There is a dead oak tree, huge dead oak tree in front of his lawn. With, I'm not kidding, a coven of ravens are living in the dead oak tree.
What the fuck?
I'm like, what the fuck?
I mean, this is literally something out of, like, Scooby-Doo, where they're on, like, a nice sunny path, and they turn the corner, it's the haunted house with bats flying out of it.
It's exactly what it was. And I was like, I'm staying here, and I'm alone. I'm traveling.
Like, Joyce, what are all those ravens doing there?
We gotta stay there.
We gotta find a black dildo to smoke weed out of.
So I end up, I'm like, what the fuck is this? There's literally a coven of ravens. Like, you couldn't get more scary than that to me at that point. And it's like, it's getting dark.
This might be a stupid question. What does a raven look like?
Like a big crow. It's a raven, you know, Edgar Allan Poe.
Guess what? Crows are scary enough, man.
Yeah, but the raven is actually it's pretty much like the bird of death. Odin, the Norse mythology.
Greg Oden.
Tommy Oden.
Yeah.
You know, he takes an eye out of himself for wisdom. There's a raven that is his other eye that sees the world. But
a raven is a
symbol of death. You know, sometimes Grim Reaper is seen with a raven.
Oh, shit. Okay.
It's scary. Yeah.
So you know this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was a medieval literature major.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Wait, right. we're
coming back to that.
Yeah, put a pin in that. Yeah.
So, we're coming back. Actually, I was focused on that. But so I'm like looking through the windows, and this is like, this house is dirty, like my cousin Vinny. Like, you saw through that window, you know?
Yeah.
So there's, like, barnacles on the window, but there's no ocean anywhere. It's
okay, Brad's
just
pulling up pictures of ravens.
Yeah, they're scary.
It's a terrifying bird.
And they're big, and they go, they're crazy. So they start calling when I come. I start looking through the windows, because I'm like, who is this guy I'm staying with? I just opened, I don't know why I didn't knock, but I just opened the door. I just, because I was freaked out, and I was doing that creep in. I swear to God, this guy is, the apartment's sparse. He's got a couch from like 1983 on there, you know, and I look, and he's making noises. I'm like, what the fuck noises are going on this? And I hear a TV and, like, grunting. So I look in, there's an old man about 70 years old. He's jerking off on the couch with his legs sprawled out on the coffee table. He's doing, like, the layback. This is real. This happened. He's laying, doing the layback with his feet up on the coffee table.
And he's watching Jeopardy.
He was watching the Golden Girls. He was jerking off to, like, fucking Blanche.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so he's and then I'm like, hello? And he's like, and he jumps up, and he bounces into the kitchen. And he comes, and then, like, 3 minutes, I just hear jingling belt buckles and shit like that. He comes back out with a cup of coffee, like he went, like nothing was happening.
Like you weren't jerking off to Blanche.
That's right.
Dude, that's a classic sitcom move, by the way. Get caught, bumbling, and then walk out. And then, because there should have been a candle after as he walked out going, oh, hi, I was just doing the dishes. And then he goes, ha, 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 ha. He was actually jerking it. Wait, so legs were up in the air?
They were on the coffee table. You know, like, he's doing a layback.
Yeah. Wow.
He's like, I'm getting comfy. I'm alone.
Hey,
I've got barnacles on my windows and a coven of ravens that are protecting my house.
No one's coming in unannounced.
I'm protected by the Grim Reaper and Odin right now, the Norse god of, you know, whatever.
I am just curious, had he jerked off the Golden Girls before? Because maybe... you know, this was a moment where he was like, I'm finally, like, with the ravens and everything else that that house presented that was not conducive to a stranger coming in.
Right.
Like, maybe, like, what other shows you think he was...
maybe that was his, like, masturbatory Rudy. You know, like, every time Rudy's on, you're like, well, I'm watching Rudy
now.
But maybe he was, like, walking in, he's going to, like, oh, the guy's going to be here in a sec. Fucking Blanche.
Oh, man.
Well, I've got to.
Yeah, this is going
to
happen.
I mean, it'd be rude not to.
It would be rude not to.
And I just imagine him, like, looking at you, trying to justify, like, hey, Golden Girls was on.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was I supposed to do?
What
not jerk off?
Right?
I mean, that's not even an option.
So I ended up
Holy
sleeping.
Crap.
He had a bed set up for me and everything, and the sheets were like sandpaper. So I just
ended up... How nervous you to touch that bed now.
I ended up literally taking the cover sheet, putting it on the couch, again sleeping like I'm a vampire in a coffin. And I got up at 5 in the morning, and I went to Starbucks. I stayed at Starbucks from 6 in the morning till 7 at night when the gig had to go. I didn't leave Starbucks. I'm eating the shitty egg salad sandwiches.
You had every meal there.
How many parfaits can I have? The protein platters? Are you fucking kidding me? I hate
Day
it.
The you saw like 6 different shift changes of baristas.
Oh, my God.
Please tell me that when you finally ended the gig and you shook the guy's hand and said your goodbyes, you said, hey, bro. Thank you for being a friend.
Yeah. That was like...
And then he like instantly gets an erection. He's like, oh, what? Yeah. Oh, it's all right. Ah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, it's not supposed to happen this way.
It's a Pavlovian erection right there. Yeah.
So does an experience like that make you... I mean, because that was my apprehension in getting involved with the Triple Room was stories like that.
Well, now I have a story like that.
Yeah, and it is a great story.
I was frightened.
But you have to love, for those of you listening, if you're a young comic, like that's the type of shit that you, I don't want to say have to go through, but I mean, I feel like you, because there's a lot of young comics I know that are out here right now that are spoiled with only doing great rooms, you know?
Yeah.
They somehow have gotten their way onto an occasional Laugh Factory show or hosting the improv, and they only do that. And I'm like, man, I hope you're doing, whether it's open mics out here, or driving to Santa Barbara for 8 minutes on some weird bar show.
Yeah.
Like, that type of shit, because you gotta... Well, yeah, that made you stronger. You came back to L.A. probably being like...
Oh, dude, I'm
so pumped to do this open mic or do this room where there's...
Because that's... You're fighting. You know, you're fighting up there. And you have to do an hour. And sometimes you're at a casino, you know, a shitty, shitty casino... Where, you know, you end up doing crowd work for 25 minutes straight, you know, and that's
just
the only thing that works.
Out of straight necessity. Because you got to compete with ding, 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 ding.
And also, it teaches you, like, it also taught me your perception, how people perceive you. Like, when I am in L.A., I wear clothes that typically fit me or that are kind of nice, you know. But I went on the road first triple I went to this horrible place. I'm wearing like, you know, jeans I would wear and a t-shirt I would wear. I'm like, I'm casual. The whole time people were just yelling fag, you know. I'm like,
no
why
kidding.
Like, yeah, why don't you wear a tighter shirt, dude? I'm wearing a shirt that fits me normal. I don't wear tight
wow,
shit.
Yeah.
You know,
but for them that is.
Oh yeah. It was the worst.
Did you get to adjust?
Do you cater to that eventually? Do you start wearing like baggy flannels?
Dude, now when I go do those rooms, I wear a flannel, I wear some beat up jeans, you know, and
I'm one of you.
Well, it's weird cuz you just don't want them to hear your material.
Right. And that's why I've always been like when I first started, my mom was like, "Wear a suit on stage. Some of these people like be nice and presentable." I'm like, you know, and I still don't feel like I'm I mean, sometimes I'll wear, you know, maybe a nicer sweater or something, but I'm always
His
very...
His nicest pair of purple pants.
But I'm always, hey, I miss those purple pants.
I love the way you dress. To me,
thank you. But I feel like I'm dressing appropriately to what I am on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and for a while when I was wearing backwards hats and like baggy t-shirts and shit, and then Bobby Lee and Brian Cowan were like, hey man, you got great hair. Stop wearing that fucking hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. And they're like, it looks like a frat guy. I'm like, you maybe were a frat guy. You don't talk about it. You're not, but that's it definitely opened me up to the idea that like people do judge immediately what you look like up there.
Mm-hmm. But then there's the other thing where when you're first starting, there's so much insecurity that you kind of do cater. And now, you know, I'm getting to the point where now, like, I know what my voice is. I know what my act is. I know my through lines and my opinions on stuff. So... Now I'm just going to be me wherever I am because I'm confident enough for that, you know? And when people see that you're, you know, audiences are empathetic.
Yeah.
If you're nervous, they're nervous for you, you know? But if you're up there like, I'm fine, stick with me, then they can relax a little bit, you know? And so once...
Did you read that in that book?
No. But once you get to the point where you're like, this is me, this is my act, I know what's good. You know, if it's not for you, it's not for you. Well, fuck you.
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when you can be what you want to be. But I think in the beginning, everyone tries to be what people want them to be just so they can get a leg up.
Oh, for sure. And that's, I mean, and you're doing jokes of, you know, what sounds funny or you're emulating what you like because you have no point of view yet.
Right.
Like when you started in upstate New York?
I started in Virginia doing a college. I almost got kicked out of college for my first time I did stand up, and then I went to Boston. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
You have so many college stories.
My college was, it's like the small school, but the crazy shit happened. So I almost got kicked
Virginia,
out of college.
Well, it's Virginia. That's pretty. Yeah. Enough said.
So, and then I went to Boston because I thought Boston was like, you know, it's when the documentary came out, when comedy stood up, you know,
yeah,
and I thought it was the
stand
mecca.
Up stood out. Stand up stood out.
I thought it was the mecca of comedy. I get there. Everyone had moved to New York or it's no longer, but it taught you to they're big into joke writing in Boston, you know, like witty joke writing and stuff like that. And then and you move to LA, and as soon as people smell a pre-written joke, I feel like they're like, next, you thought of that already. I'm like, well, that's what this is, dude.
Yeah.
And then you have to balance like that thing between written jokes and just being off the cuff and personality making it look.
Well, there's so many different flavors of comedy now too, that it's like people are almost getting too many different flavors to where they're like, I don't know what I like.
Yeah.
What was Virginia? So Virginia was for college, but
Virginia was for college.
And what college was that?
Mary Washington College.
And they had a major of
Mary Washington.
Yeah, it was a Middle Ages symbolism. What the hell was your major?
How did you almost get kicked out of Mary Washington College?
So I was a business major in college because I played baseball. So everybody on the
that's
team.
That's right.
I went
and
to
you
college
were dope.
For baseball. I was pretty good. Yeah.
Don't be humble.
I was good. Yeah.
That's awesome.
All this and that and whatever.
Because, hey, man, there's not very many comics that we know that were athletically stellar.
Yeah. I mean, I went, I thought that I was going to be a baseball player. Coming out of high school, I was in collegiate baseball magazines, top blue chip prospects in the country. You know,
what?
I played and we won Bay State games is a big thing in Massachusetts. It's like your state games, but it's huge there. It's like, the biggest scouts in the country are there. You know, I went to the biggest scouted camps. You know, I had a lot of D1 scouts.
You were destined to be opened in a package next to some bubble gum.
Exactly. That's what I wanted.
You were like, Fleer Ultra, here I come.
Yeah. So I go to college to play baseball and you know, but I was always like a funny guy. I was always dicking around.
I was going to ask because every comic at some point was either like storyteller or mimicked friend, did impressions.
Yeah.
Or
I would always fuck with my coach. Like, you know, one time he was a mean bastard. I mean, he was a mean son.
Nobody stuck up to him.
Oh, you couldn't. And he was this little tiny 5'6" little pit bull guy.
God.
And he had one eye.
I hate short fuckers.
Oh, fuck this guy.
I know. Yeah. Fucking short assholes.
Anybody below 6 feet has a problem.
Exactly. Kill them all.
He had one eye that stayed a little bit more closed than the other, and they were two different colors, and it looked the other way. He was just
holy
a frightening
shit.
Man.
That's not fair.
He looks like he's a character of Pirates of the Caribbean.
And I didn't like that. I don't like that kind of... those guys that are like intimidating.
I don't like those kind of half-eyed people.
I don't like those fucking squinty eyes. No. And so, you know, I would always fuck with him. He, like, one time he had us all around. And he goes, you know what? We got the conference title coming up here, and I don't want to hear any of you fucking assholes coming in, call him saying, I can't make practice because I got the fucking sniffles. So that night I called his office, left a message saying I was my roommate at the time, who was our catcher. I was like, hey, coach, this is Brad. I got a wicked case of sniffles, and I'm not going to make any practice tomorrow.
So funny.
And so I come into practice the next day, and he goes, Monopar, get the fuck out of here. You knew it was me.
Yeah.
So he sent me home. And then there was a doubleheader. We lost the first game. And in between, I was like making our whole dugout laugh. And he goes, you know, Monopar, you want to be a fucking clown? Go be a fucking clown. So I went and said, okay, I'll be a fucking clown.
Nice. Thanks,
so I started
coach.
Doing I was like, thank you. I'll do that. So I started doing stand-up.
Dude, isn't that crazy? He's somewhat responsible.
Yeah, and he was responsible for me hating. Like, I used to love baseball. I used to sleep with my glove on a pedestal next to my bed. I would smell it before I went to bed. I was crazy about baseball.
Oh,
now
shit.
I don't even know who's... I don't know anything. I don't know who's playing on what team. Phil Plantier is the last guy I knew.
Phil Plantier.
Give me some Carlos Quintana.
Fred McGriff?
Yeah, oh, McGriff. I had so many McGriff cards.
Who were your favorite players?
Mike Greenwell. Nice. Loved Greenwell with the
Boston Red Sox, third baseman.
Yeah,
he
McGriff.
Yeah. Mo Vaughn.
Oh, Luscious Mo Vaughn.
Luscious? Oh, jeez. All right. He's got an unhealthy relationship.
If you put a wig on him, he could be like an SNL. He would be one of the...
He's like... Who's the guy that came after Tracy Morgan?
Keenan Thompson.
There we go.
Keenan Thompson could probably do a great Mo Vaughn.
He could do a great Mo Vaughn. I almost went to Providence College because Providence University because he went to Providence.
So you thought, I got to... do the same life path as Mo Vaughn.
And I played in the basic games. He did, you know, it was a big, it was awesome.
And like, so literally you have people telling you that you have the chance to be a pro baseball player. And this coach just made you go, nah.
Well, I ended up hurting myself, and I ended up, he sort of disenfranchised my love for baseball, and mm-hmm. so I started partying more, and my life became more about making people laugh and having fun and
right.
getting girls and doing all that stuff. So I started doing stand-up comedy. I'll tell this real quick. I told it on another podcast, but I'll tell you guys
right.
here. So my first time I ever did stand-up was in fourth grade. My teacher, I was such a little annoying, you know, I was like a loud kid,
yeah,
and I was always wisecracking. So she's like, Jay, if you just be quiet, I'll let you do a routine.
Okay.
So I wrote, I was big into Bill Cosby himself, was like that, and Louis Anderson, Live at the Guthrie, my two favorites. And so I wrote
Bill Cosby BR, before rape.
Before rape, yeah.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
No, during.
Well, during, but before we knew about it, okay.
BKR, before knowledge of rape. So I wrote a thing called Jay Monopar himself, and
okay.
I did like three skits in front of my class, and
holy
then
shit.
That went well, so I was a little hustler then, so I started writing, I transcribed it, and I sold it to my classmates for $1 each, my transcribed version of
Look
my thing.
You fucking
And then
hustler.
I started doing like Weird Al Yankovic, my teacher let me take me and a bunch of friends, and I could go do, I could do whole choreographed Weird Al Yankovic, I did Fat, Weird
yeah.
Al Yankovic, Fat is a bad song, you know, mm-hmm. and so we got the whole like two classes, grades together. So it's like, you know, 100 and something kids. And we'd bring me to the auditorium. We'd perform it in the middle of the day. We'd do it and then just go back to class.
Holy shit.
So I kind of knew that if it was either baseball or stand-up,
yeah.
I wanted to do. But baseball was like, I was running with it. I ended up hurting myself and I just realized it was just too difficult.
You have know? To be, I mean, once an injury comes on, it's just like, all right, am I going to
yeah.
go through the rehab and then...
And I did the rehabs. I went from having a major league average arm. I threw 85 from a standstill. Yeah, you got it.
Of course I got it. You think I got Weird Al?
Yeah, that's what you masturbate to when you listen to the Golden Girls.
Yeah. I'm too much man for you to take.
So in college, so at one point I'm like, okay, I'll do stand-up.
Yeah.
I got to do this. And you know how frightening that is.
Terrifying.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
So I found...
Because making your friends laugh is not the same. Anyone, because you hear it all the time, people will be like... My buddy Jake should do stand-up, man, because he's
yeah.
so funny at parties.
Right.
And you know what? Sometimes that guy does translate to the stage. But like,
sometimes
man,
it's definitely not.
It's a completely different beast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, and then there's this expectation of you, you know, to be good.
There's
so,
no pressure when you're at a party in a circle.
No,
you're fine. If you tell a great story, people
let's go
are
say,
like,
oh. Yeah, let's go
yeah.
see Jay. He's the funny guy.
Yeah.
And now everyone knows he's
so
the funny guy.
We go down to this place called The Underground, which is this little it's like a cafe, you know, in, mm-hmm. in our school. And, all my friends pack.
It's like the Max.
It is the Max. Yeah.
Every college has one.
The Peach
yeah.
Pit.
The Peach Pit. We had the Commons at USC. The Peach.
Exactly.
Yeah. How bad did you want to hang out at the Peach Pit?
Are
by
you
the
kidding
way?
Me? I almost. I. With, that's what I name every girlfriend's vagina. The Peach Pit.
Nice. Jay Monopar, everybody. Andrea Zucker, right? Fucking Kelly Kapowski.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no. Well, she ended up being on 90210.
Yeah.
But she's
eventually.
Always Kelly Kapowski.
It's all the same world, my friend.
Sure.
It's all the same world. So,
yeah. The kids from 90210 hang out with Saved by the Bell, and they all ball with the kids from the Family Matters.
Oh, you know they're hanging out.
Exactly.
You know,
they have to.
They're eating fucking guacamole cheese dip together. So I'm like, okay, I'll do this. So I signed up for an open mic, which is actually a poetry open mic.
Nice.
I end up doing a parody of a poem, of a Langston Hughes poem. I didn't realize that this Langston Hughes poem was like it's a seminal piece of work for the Harlem Renaissance. So it's when Harlem Renaissance literature and African-American voices are starting to become well-known. And this guy was sort of the vanguard in that movement.
Yeah.
But I was in class and I just heard, and the thing was called What Happens to a Dream Deferred. It was called The Dream Deferred. But in my head, my associative ridiculous brain, I go, what happens to farts when they're deferred? Like, where do they go? So I wrote a whole
great question.
Poem called What Happens to a Fart Deferred. And I read that, you know, after like people are doing these pouring their hearts out
right.
poems, like I'm the bird and the bird is dead and I'm the black raven, you know.
A lot of snaps, yeah.
Yeah. So I do my thing, and then I
lots of bongos, lots of bongos.
I've been listening to so much Martin Lawrence and Damon Wayans and mm-hmm. Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor. So my world became like sort of like black comedy, you know, at the time.
Man.
And I'm just looking for anything that I think is funny. You have
right.
no stories. You have nothing.
No.
There. It's just what is funny. I got to say.
Yes.
So then I start doing bits about like, you know, that. white people perpetuate the myth of the black cock. You know, that was a bit I had because it's a college campus too. You know, I'm giving examples, and then. You know, then I end up doing a bit about Body by Jake, the you know, the workout video.
Yes,
Body by Jake.
Oh, we all know those infomercials. Yeah.
So you know, they'd be on all the time. So I remember, I realized there was they'd always shoot him in Malibu, like overlooking the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And this guy had been doing this for like 5 years, and always there was this heavy African-American guy in the background, and he'd been on every video, everyone I've seen, and the fucking guy never lost a goddamn pound. He's the fucking fat, still fat, you know, but he just happened to be African-American. So I was like, and then there's this fat black guy back there, and then that, for some reason, that went over the, like, there was a college, there was one of the professors from the English department in the audience, and he stands up and goes, this is really fucking offensive, man, really fucking offensive. And then I'm up there like, I'm sorry, I didn't know. I got it shattered.
You don't know how to handle a heckler or crowd.
Sure.
Do and crowd work at this
no,
point?
No, I don't know anything. I'm just trying
professor
to. No, I'm just throwing
professor.
Spaghetti at a wall to see what sticks, you know? Yeah. And then one of my.
Racist spaghetti.
Racist. None of it, it wasn't. That's not racist.
No,
if he was
it's
a
not.
White guy, it
he
was
heard
fat.
Fat black guy,
yeah.
And it sounded
that's
very
it
negative.
Yeah, yeah, and I just I didn't realize what this poem was about that I did a parody on. You know, it all kind of accumulated. It was like this catastrophic failure. I got laughs, though. I did get laughs.
By the way, it's February, so happy Black History Month,
right,
everybody.
Yeah, So, of course, this guy goes, really fucking offensive, man. And one of my friends stands up, who's a big Southern dude, and he goes, that's because you got a small dick, motherfucker, and to a professor. You know?
Oh, God.
So then the place gets
Jerry.
In an uproar, and it clears out. And there's still half the open mic to go, but the place clears out because most of them are my friends. They don't give a shit anymore about this.
Right.
So then, you know, the next day, one of the girl who was running the whole event, she sends out an email to everybody on campus, from the janitors all the way up to the president of the school. Everybody, and this is not internet, this is intranet, so everything's confined
right.
to the server.
So you could, this was back in the days where you could literally just go all school, like
all school.
Click a box.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
nuts.
And that's what she did. So she sent it out. I get this email from her. I'm like, oh, shit. And she's calling me racist. Jay Monopar should be kicked out of school.
Whoa.
He should. Holy people fuck. Like this are what make this school a terrible place to be. There's still racism down here. It's a pretty white school, too. And so
his t-shirts are way too tight for his body.
He should be wearing more flannel.
Yeah.
Who does he think he is? So then, you know, I don't respond, but... Next thing you know, it's a conflagration of emails back and
forth.
Right.
Oh,
no. You know, and then people threatening me. If I see him on campus, I'm going to fuck him up. Literally, I will fuck him up. So I had to start walking. And then my friends are responding to these people.
Right.
So what ended up happening, it became so many emails.
I was going to say, the more it's perpetuated,
the
bigger
crazy.
Of an issue becomes.
Yeah. So what ended up happening, and this is absolutely true, the server slowed down on campus from all of the craziness. It really was that like
Jay Monopar's racist spaghetti broke the internet.
Yeah. So then I'm in the middle of a linguistics class, and after the class this guy comes in, he goes, I'm a photographer for, you know, the school newspaper, The Bullet. I want to take a picture of you. We're gonna be doing an article on you. So I happened to have a copy of Mark Twain Huck Finn on me, and I thought it would be funny, like, because what I was doing was like, I thought that it was ironic that they were taking what I was saying
right.
and being racist. Twain was the same way. They
right.
you know, they misunderstood what he was saying.
Exactly.
So
it's also ironic that he works for a paper that's named after the thing people want to put through
right.
you.
Yeah. So I end up taking the Mark Twain book, turning it upside down, putting it right under my head, and doing this big smile like,
oh, man, yeah.
So the article comes out. Local college guy is racist or whatever, and they crop the picture, so it just shows a big picture of me smiling the shit-eating grin without the book underneath it.
Oh,
so
that's
now
the whole joke.
Yeah, I know. So now I look like a fucking asshole.
Yeah,
I'm
like,
yeah, fuck you, black people.
Yeah,
you know,
fuck
like,
you, black people. Should have been the title.
So then, and then I find out later that the kid, I just refound the article in my little collection of, you know, the sentimental keepers.
Awesome. Because of course you saved it.
And I look at it. And I see who wrote it. Mark Agee wrote it. Do you know Mark?
Yes.
Mark, he's a comic now.
Yes.
He started in Texas at the Improvs out there. So now he lives in L.A.
Shit.
He wrote the thing. So I ran into him in Los Angeles. I'm like, you motherfucker. You wrote the... You almost got me kicked out of school.
Yeah.
So then after that, this hits. Now I'm a pariah on campus.
Sure.
I can't talk to... I'm at parties. You know, we had the biggest party house in the thing. Every girl that comes up to me is like, oh, you're the racist.
Oh,
so I have to climb out of this hole
oh,
to
God.
Even like make out with somebody at
and
this point.
And
you know?
Then I'm sure you have guys come up to you like, hey, man, I really like what you said.
Oh, yeah.
I agree. We should kill all them darkies. You're like, I never said that shit.
It's just crazy. I had to start walking around campus with, I would sometimes have a couple friends walk with me that were huge,
you know,
like sausage finger redneck guys, you know?
Uh-huh.
And just because I could have gotten beat up. I was getting threatened all the time. Then the president of the college calls me and says, you know, I heard about this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to look into this. We have to investigate this thing. You know, this. So I end up now. My parents call me. What did you say? What they don't. You know, they don't hear my side. They just
of course.
What the fuck did you say? They're crazy. I'm like, I didn't say.
What have you done to the Manapar family name?
And I've recorded this too. So I still have this whole night recorded on a little dictaphone.
That's
I have
incredible.
The tape. So the call. You know, the he's like, I heard you have this and that. You know, we're gonna look into this. So now I'm freaked out. Mm-hmm. I don't respond to anything. Then I find out from one of the administrators there that they're going to now have a race relations forum on campus at the auditorium where they're bringing down delegates from Washington, D.C., because it was 40 minutes south of D.C. They're bringing in delegates. The NAACP came. They,
oh,
like,
my God!
I'm not kidding. And they had a panel.
Martin Luther King Jr. Jr.
Yeah, his second cousin twice removed was there. Marlon Wayans
the
was
cast
there.
Of The Color Purple was there.
Sure.
Oprah showed up.
Danny
Oprah.
Glover.
Yeah, Glover's there, and he's just said, I'm too old for this shit. So they wanted me to be on the panel.
Oh, God.
And so the auditorium got completely full, 3,000 people.
We need you to be on the panel supporting racism.
Yeah,
wait, what?
Right. I'm like, no, they're going to just be throwing cabbage and shit at me the whole time. So I don't respond to that. And then I ended up having to get a lawyer.
What the fuck?
And so it ended up kind of just going the president. I got an email from the president saying we looked into this matter. It seems that you actually weren't. You know, we're gonna let this go. We're gonna drop this. And so then I started doing my act down in Richmond, Virginia. The ironic thing was Richmond, Virginia is it's kind of a non-gentrified place. You know, it's
I've been to the Richmond Funny Bone many times.
You know, so the ironic thing is I'm driving down to Richmond with a car full of my buddies to do this open mic at a music open mic thing, and we pull up to this corner and there's this group of African-American teenagers sitting there. Mm-hmm. They start throwing rocks at my car right before I get to the gig. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, here it is again.
They
haven't even heard anything.
Yeah. So, holy crap.
Yeah, so I did the gig there, and then they loved it, you know, because it's the people at the bar. It was like O'Brien's, you know, it's this Irish place. They're like, fuck yeah, man.
There you were. That guy's smart. Yeah. He got some good ideas.
Dude,
and then the worst part is, the next year, I transferred from being a business major to an English major. So, all the English department hates me. You know, all the kids, everybody in it, they hate me because I have this reputation. And this professor was an English professor that did these things. So now I got to go into the lion's den. I become an English major. I had to complete an entire degree in a year and a half. And every class I was in, they're all just like, they gave me the... You know, up and down.
Now, how much of that can you just like take? And I mean, you have to have a pep talk with yourself where you're like, all right, dude, you know how tough of a situation you're putting yourself into. But if you fucking get through this, man.
I mean, what I know a lot of comics, and I've never heard anybody's first time doing stand up be that aggressively ridiculous.
Dude, to cause a whole like a meeting
uproar.
On race in the school.
Oh yeah.
And it's like I was just trying to tell fucking jokes.
Right. But you know what it gave me? It at that time I was like, you know what? I'm gonna someday these motherfuckers are gonna pay me to headline this college. That is my goal. That is my dream.
Yeah.
For them to pay me to headline. So I did NACA 2010. Mary Washington booked me. I headlined there. I did an hour and 35. And at the end,
dropped 47 N bombs.
Yeah, and at the end of my set, I told that story I just told you guys, and everyone in the whole place cheered out. Fuck Watkins. That was the professor.
Yeah.
I had everyone give me a big. Everyone, fuck Watkins. Everyone's like, fuck Watkins.
How amazing was that?
But after that, you know, you're like, you go for this goal, and then I was like, well, maybe I'm done with comedy. I achieved my goal.
Yeah, man.
I went through a lull. I was like, I've been going for this one thing my whole life.
Got a couple thousand people to chant, fuck Watkins.
Yeah.
How could I top this?
Oh, and the best part about it was, so I became friends with one of my English professors. She was an awesome, the reason I became a medieval lit focus is because this one professor, Kennedy, or Professor Kennedy, this woman was a genius. She could quote any line from any page of any, you know, arcane script.
Okay.
After class, she'd be like, come on back in my office. She became my buddy. Mm-hmm. And we used to sit in her office and drink Bushmills and fucking shit on everybody in the English department. And she told me, she goes, you know what, Jay, as a result of that thing that Watkins did, you know, that thing that happened with your stand-up, he didn't get a raise the next year. So he got fucked for starting this whole thing. He didn't get a raise. I got rebooked to do the college and headline. Wow. Life was good. And I performed on the same stage I saw Run DMC and Beck.
Well, that's done, sir.
That's an ABC Family movie waiting to happen.
No kidding.
Mario
right?
Lopez in Fuck Watkins.
No, it's an NBC diversity made for TV waiting to happen.
Now you say she could quote anything. I'm very curious about that because I mean
Beowulf, you know, Canterbury Tales, all that stuff.
Wait, do I still know the beginning of the prologue? The one that I played with the shortest sota?
Oh, you know this.
Yeah.
People think that literature was so highbrow.
Yeah.
His stories, one of them is a guy, is a woman or a guy wants to go be with another woman's wife, and he goes to climb up the window, and the husband sticks his butt out the window and farts in the guy's face when he gets to the top. Like, that's highbrow.
No. Yeah. It's fucking Chaucer. So, I'm not going to pretend like I can... like quote Chaucer with
no,
me. Like, I can't
quote Chaucer.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
Would she ever just be sitting there and throw you for a complete loop and be like, feel the rhythm.
Feel the rhyme.
Get on up. It's bobsled time.
The best part about that is
goodnight,
I'm friends
Jay.
With Dolly, Raleigh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Who's a comic.
Yeah, he's a comic.
And a commercial casting director, right?
Yeah, we did, which is the weirdest thing. I'm
crazy.
He's casting. I'm like, you're cool.
He plays,
the egg guy. He kisses the egg, right?
No. He plays,
the rich kid.
Junior.
Yeah, Junior, right.
Yeah, the rich
Junior,
kid, yeah,
baby.
Yeah, who looks in the mirror and he goes, I got pride, I got power, I'm a badass mother who don't take no crap about nobody.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, Junior.
I got pride, yeah. I got power. I love that.
Yeah.
That was the original, you're good enough, you're smart enough.
Totally.
Gosh darn it,
totally.
Love you.
That movie.
Amazing movie.
Unbelievable. I'll still cry watching it.
Dude,
of that.
The worst. Sure. Isn't it the terrible thing when you a movie you grew up and you loved
mm-hmm.
so much,
mm-hmm.
you watch it now and it's like you go on Rotten Tomatoes and you're like, a zero?
Oh, really?
Dude, my favorite
7%?
Movie.
7%? How could Shanghai Nights be so misleading?
I love
dissected.
That. Oh,
yeah,
dude.
I saw it three times in the theater.
Oh, dude, my favorite
still
movie.
Still haven't seen fucking Lord of the Rings, but I've seen Shanghai Nights three
dude,
times.
Dude,
I mean, that's
movie,
all you need.
Favorite movie growing up was Johnny B. Goode with Anthony Michael Hall.
Wow.
Uma Thurman and Robert Downey Jr.
Good pull.
I love it. So the other day I was
Robert Downey Jr. Pre-drugs.
Pre-drugs.
That's how old it is.
Yeah, but playing like he was on drugs.
Right.
So I went to like Amoeba the other day. I was like, I got to get me some Johnny B. Goode. I need some Johnny B. Goode in my life.
Good move.
So that's
what Amoeba's great for. They've everything.
So they had a double feature, Johnny B. Goode and Youngblood with Rob, do you remember that movie?
Two the please.
Hockey? Yeah,
yes.
Right. So I get them both. I pop in. I'm like, honey, this is the best movie ever. She's like, watching. She's like, this is the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. And then she pulls up Rotten Tomatoes, zero on it. Zero.
0% for the movie that shaped your childhood.
Oh, yeah. And then I was performing at the Improv, and I look in the back row, Anthony Michael Hall's there. I call him Sir Anthony Michael Hall.
Of course,
as you should.
And he's back there, and I just for him, I yell out a quote from the movie. I'm like, who wants to get a mean on, son? And
oh,
I just see him go,
God.
Yeah.
Just nodding enthusiastically.
He came up to me after the show.
I got
late
because of that line.
He goes, yeah, I fucking got that. Good
That's
for you.
Fucking awesome.
Okay, you know what? You just sparked something in me, and we've never done this before on the podcast, and I didn't even clear with Adam. So fuck it, but I think it's a good idea.
If you're going to play the ending of Cool Runnings, I'm going to cry right now.
No.
Yeah.
Four black dudes holding a bobsled with John Candy on the sidelines going, I'm Uncle Buck someday.
Yeah.
You know, that was...
Should have seen the toast. I couldn't even get it through the door.
you're going to say a movie from your childhood that you loved, that shaped your childhood. I got Rotten Tomatoes pulled up right now.
Okay.
And, that's a great game.
And we'll try to see. Now, I know Corolla does the Rotten Tomatoes game. We're not going to do a competition of it. We're just going to see if you can guess what... Our movies from our childhood, what they are
okay.
on
So we're guessing
tomatoes.
The percentage.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we already know Johnny B. Goode is a zero.
Okay.
I
don't
even understand.
I know.
If you have something before me.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year.
I just watched that the other day. It was on TV.
Fucking Rookie of the Year.
Did he say Funky Butt Lovin'? One of the greatest movie quotes of all time.
Yeah.
Gary Busey as an alcoholic.
Gary Busey before Gary Busey became really Gary Busey.
I know.
Where he was like, oh, he was great.
Yeah.
Daniel Stern.
We had so many like good kid baseball movies.
Yeah.
We had Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Little Big League.
Little Big
that
League.
That to me is one of the best because it's like every kid would love to own a team.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, and he's sitting there, the worst.
And his buddies
there,
are giving him shit.
Gum on the sides, and he's telling these adults what to do.
I love those scenes when the buddies were like, you never have time to hang out. I was like, shut the fuck
he's
up.
He's running a
dude.
Fucking baseball team.
Yeah, man. Also, you get free tickets and sit in the box and get to play on the field, man.
Yeah. And if my friend was mopey like that, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah.
Kidding me?
And give me your bike.
All right. Rookie of the Year, 1993.
Boom.
Starring
Vanilla Ice overshadowed
him. Thomas Ian Nichols.
Thomas Ian Nichols. Gary Gary Busey.
Daniel Stern.
Some woman named Amy Morton.
Yeah, that was the mom.
All right,
you
guys.
Got flashcards?
Holy shit. So what do you think?
23%.
23% says you.
I'm gonna say I'm gonna say 69%.
69%.
What do you got?
39%.
Boom.
Oh, God,
I didn't go over. You went over.
Can I be honest? That feels terrible.
Okay.
And that sucks because that movie, I love that movie.
Well, yeah, it was Rotten Tomatoes wasn't born in the 90s.
No.
You know?
Also, sometimes they do like a 99% and you watch it, it's like kill me.
Yeah.
I want to die.
You're like, really? 99% for Sophie's Choice?
Yeah, right.
All right.
Okay, ready? This one's going to be pretty arcane. Okay. This is probably one of my top fives growing up.
Okay.
Disorderlies. It was the Fat Boys made a movie. Do you guys remember the Fat Boys?
Oh, yeah.
You were either a Fat Boys lover or a VMC lover.
The Fat Boys are back.
And, you know, they can never be whack.
Yeah.
I went for a run with who? My nuts all around the block. Took no shortcuts. Ran all the way home. Busted down the door. And my nuts was dragging all over the floor. Now, don't go. I can go on forever.
Dude, you love
the
that
Fat
shit.
Boys, yeah.
Was that your jam in college? I mean, it was a music.
Ralph Bellamy.
Yeah. In college? Oh, I started listening to like...
Prince Marquis.
Oh, I think I was listening to the... My music taste is so eclectic. It was like Steely Dan and the Spin Doctors.
Of course, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Little Miss, can't be wrong.
The original jam band.
So good. Wow, you may have broke Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it below? It's not even on there?
There's no tomato meter score. Not enough critics have reviewed it.
It's so good. You got to go watch Disorderlies, the Fat Boys. You can't even get their albums anymore on iTunes. You can't get Fat Boys on iTunes.
Now, I can tell you what the audience score is.
What is it?
Okay, well, first, guess the audience score. This is not critics. This is pure audience.
86%.
86%. Adam, did you even see Disorderlies? I didn't.
Nope.
Did you hear about it in your life?
Nope.
That's so good.
Well, but it's...
They become nurse's assistants or something like that at a hospital, and then they get involved in a drug cartel ring at a house.
Like you do.
Right, like you do. When you weigh 753 pounds.
It's at 53%.
No way.
With the audience.
My first guess was going to be 53%.
Wow.
But I thought it's so good.
Now, I'm not going to type in mine, obviously, because I already know the
score.
Answer in front of me. But my childhood movie, the movie that I've probably seen over 20 times in my life.
Yeah.
The original Mighty Ducks.
Oh, yeah.
Great call.
Oh, the original Mighty
Ducks. That can't be anything lower than an 87%. No. And if it is...
I'm going to go with 82.
You're going to go 82%?
Even though it can't be more than less than 87.
No, it can't be.
You just your asshole just tightened up a little bit
it
there,
did.
Adam. What
it
happened?
Did. My asshole went quack, quack.
You got Biggie Smalls would say you got tight like frog's ass.
rest in peace.
All right, Adam. So you're 87, did you say?
Yeah.
All right, and you're 80...
Three, I think I said.
God, it's going to break my heart, but I'm going to say 62.
Okay.
All right. Hold on. Mighty Ducks started a franchise that won the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
2007.
Are you texting your agent right now? Find me a copy of Disorderlies by the Fat Boys immediately.
So funny. I wish I had that type of cachet.
Get me that.
Get me Mighty Ducks.
Fuck you, Rotten 42%. Tomatoes.
42%.
Oh, I wish it was that high.
23.
I wish it was that high.
12?
17.
15%.
Why?
That's
do we
awful,
have that
dude. We
got to
stop
taste?
This game. This is the worst game ever.
Yeah, it's making me feel terrible.
It's going to be like, next they're going to rate the love our parents had for us. Yeah, right. 9%.
9%.
From
I swear.
They did.
The sad thing is, as comics, we wouldn't think it was anything more than 63%.
Oh, so we'd be so self-loathing. Yeah. Oh, I was about a 35 on my best day.
Man, that's high. That's high. It's a high rating. Dude, we had... I just was thinking about college. We had the craziest, the weirdest shit goes on down south because I grew up, the school I went to was a Civil War town. So there was all ghost stories and everything around there.
Did they do like the reenactments and stuff?
Yeah, they would do reenactments, but there was also people that would give tours. But, and this is kind of a non sequitur. I was just thinking about this, and it's just a, I just remembered this, and it just hit me. But we used to do this thing. There's a pyramid in the middle of a field. Where it's a Civil War monument, but it's literally a stone pyramid in the middle of the field with train tracks that run alongside of it. So what?
This isn't a NyQuil dream you had a couple weeks ago.
So this is the craziest. This thing sounds we used awesome. To do. We used to, you know, we'd be at a party with a couple girls. You usually get a guy, you know, one of your buddies, and be like, "Hey, dude, you want a pyramid? Do you want to do some pyramid with these girls?" And you'd be like, "Yeah," or you'd just be like, "Pyramid." You just go, and so you slowly get into this story about Ladies, have you heard about the pyramid? You
know, they're like, of course they haven't.
What's the pyramid? You're like, and so you would tell. So there's this pyramid out in the middle of a Civil War battlefield, and the legend is that this young couple was out there, and you know they were kind of making out or whatever, and the girl had to go pee, so she went around the side of the pyramid and she peed, and when she came back, her boyfriend was dismembered. All of his body parts were on each corner of the pyramid, and his head was on top of it. Mm-hmm. And so she freaked out, and then she looked over, and there was an old man riding a bicycle on the train tracks.
And he was jerking off to the golden girls.
And he did it. You know, he killed. So what we did, like, do you want to go check out the pyramid? So you'd go to the pyramid.
And they'd always say yes to that?
Yeah, I did it like a couple times. So you could pull right up to the pyramid. You could pull right. There was a little entrance right there. But what you would do is you'd park about a half mile away. And we're sports guys, so everyone had, like, in the back of their cars, they'd have some baseball bats or some golf clubs. So each one of us would grab a baseball bat or a golf club and be like, stay close. And they'd be all freaked out. And you'd stop them every once in a while, like, wait, what was that? Chris, go check out that. Just go check out that bush. And he'd go out and he'd fucking
check out that bush.
Like, hit the bush. You'd be like, we're clear. And then you go.
You're doing like marine signals with each other.
Yeah. And it was the craziest psychological thing because
they feel so safe with you.
They felt safe and they felt.
How did he know to hit that bush so hard?
Yeah.
He just killed whatever was in that bush. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm totally going to fuck him
and
later.
You'd play it out the whole way through because you're like, you'd talk about like, I believe in ghosts, and you tell a ghost story about how something happened in your life. And then you go there and they felt like scared and safe and powerless, but with a powerful person.
If you can balance that line between scared and safe, between like putting the fear of God in them, but then being like,
it's like, don't worry, I'll handle
it. And it would work. You'd be out. It'd be a full moon in the middle of a field with a pyramid, and you'd have like outdoor pyramid sex.
Wait, you would at the end of that.
How
would you initiate that?
Because what would happen was
you segue out of an urban legend, be like, and that's when they knew that Jimmy the Big Dick, Jimmy the Big Dick Rodriguez was beheaded right over there. Yeah. Speaking of big dicks.
Well, you tell the story and you go and then you're like, do you hear anything? And then so what would happen is one guy would be like, hey, let's go check out the other side. Let's see what's going on over there. And you'd go look for like blood or whatever. And then when the person got there, you had your own little separate areas and then you start making out. And then the girl I was with, she looks at me, she goes, I have a condom. I was like, okay, game up.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Wow, so did you ever like pay an old man to ride by on a bicycle?
Oh, that's taking it a little fun. If it needed to come to that, listen, we'll give you the look up here. And then otherwise you're cool to see some hot dogs.
Isn't this a funny,
excellent. Excellent hired, Three Amigos reference,
by the
way.
Crazy old man to come by and just go, don't go that the way. And then
some old man whistling like Poltergeist walking by with that fucking weird Amish hat.
Dude, that was your like lookout point or whatever. You know how some people have, like, let's go to Makeout Mountain.
And it was the craziest.
Have Makeout Mountain? Did anyone have a Makeout Mountain? Well, I guess you guys had the pyramid.
Yeah, the pyramid.
What do they have in Fullerton?
Oh God, there's no mountains.
Wait, where's Fullerton?
Fullerton's right next to Anaheim, California.
Oh, okay.
So it's Orange County. There's,
you're like, let's go to the outdoor mall that costs $7 billion. Dude, by the fountain, an Armenian guy lost a shoe.
Let's go to the Dave and Buster's where a fat kid won 60 tickets on a fucking skee ball.
Legend has it that at this Abercrombie & Fitch, they once sold a t-shirt for $22.
And then it turned into a pack sun, and then it was all over.
That's the closest thing we had to a ghost story in fucking Orange County. We didn't have anything like that.
Speaking of pack sun.
Yeah.
Speaking of other cool...
you can do a plug for some advertisement.
No,
Pack Sun.
I wish they sponsored us.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, Brad worked at the closest thing to Pack Sun, which is
Hot Topic.
Hot Topic.
Yeah, it did.
Is that their jingle?
It should be.
Did they steal Hot Pockets jingle? Wait, did Hot Pocket rip off Hot Topic?
And then they had the CEO had sex right here. They stole
that
our
sounds
jingle.
Like a Dateline NBC. Yeah. Did Hot Topic rip off Hot Pocket?
Oh man, and then like there's some gothic version of Jim Gaffigan doing like a Hot Topic joke,
yeah, talking to himself after a joke.
No, I wanted to segue. Because we have only got a little bit more time.
How much time have we been talking?
Close to an hour, buddy.
No way.
Yeah. Time flies
when you're with the greatest people in the world.
Oh.
That's so
and this
nice
rustic, refinished table.
Isn't
I love
it great?
It. You got good tables.
Do you like this chair in the corner?
I do. I like all this.
Bob Saget said, that looks like a chair that, what do you call it? The schmegma chair.
Yeah, the schmegma chair.
They should have it in that place in Tacoma. That's the fucking black sheep.
He goes, it looked like an old man had a pastrami sandwich and then came on it.
Oh, on the sandwich and then ate it?
Or I don't know. We didn't get. We didn't ask any follow-up.
Imagine qualifying that on the sandwich, Bob, or on the chair.
Yeah. So funny. He did it in the America's Funniest Home Video voice, too.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy that, I mean, I've known you for how long, man? When do we... I feel like
you
I
know,
met
you
pretty
you.
Early. When I started stand-up.
When I took over Bruco, maybe?
Yep.
And I used to have you on all the time.
Yeah.
You used to always come in with like a deep V t-shirt.
Oh,
and
that
and
sounds like Ray.
You would come in with a... I loved it. First time I saw you, I know exactly
what
you're wearing. Oh, I was like, this guy's a fucking... Either he's a graphic novel villain or he's the coolest guy I've ever met in my life. You had a deep V t-shirt and you were wearing a 3/4 length black overcoat. Coat over it. Do you
a pea coat, yeah.
And I think you had a hat on too. I was like, this guy's mixing media right here. What is he, New York? Is he Seattle? Is he California?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think you'll still wear like a basketball jersey with nothing under it and a top coat over that. Like that's something with like swim trunks.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
That's definitely an Adam Ray outfit.
With my puffy vest.
Yeah, and like some like high shine Ferragamo loafers.
You
like
got
I
it.
Don't know what I'm doing, but
you're
I got
welcome.
It all covered. I can play basketball, I can go swimming. I can go to a fucking gala.
I like that. It's triple threat is what I call that.
What did somebody said about you? They said you dress like a 9-year old.
Oh, Greg Giraldo.
Yeah. What was it? What
well,
did you
he, say? I was wearing a backwards hat. I was clean shaven. And I had this like checkered short sleeved polo shirt.
Yeah.
And jeans that were just not nice. And he goes, I was hosting for him at the Irvine Improv. And he goes, keep it going for Adam. Thanks a lot for, I guess it was dressed up like a fucking 9-year-old night here at the Irvine Improv. And I really did. It was like a kid that
did
was
that
just,
fuck your setup in the beginning? Like, no. Do I really?
No. Well, this is after I brought him up.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was my favorite comic.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And
this is still even back when, because now you got the high and tight hair. This is when you had the part right down the middle, right?
My hair was huge for a while.
You're going like quasi pompadour now, I think.
Yeah, but it's even shorter now.
Oh, okay.
here's what
I love
him defending it.
It's a truncated pompadour. It's
so funny.
Listen, it's Vinny 2 years before he got to the Jersey Shore. Excuse me.
Fuck you.
I like it. I like it.
Thank
I like
you.
It. I like
Speaking
it
of great hair,
mm-hmm.
Jay Manapar is the host of Ellen's Design Challenge.
Yeah.
And this is what I want to get to because you've been grinding.
Yeah.
The grind of this business for what, 10 plus years?
15. I've been in Los Angeles since 2004.
And
it started in 2000.
And you've gotten to be in every avenue of, you know, crushing the commercial world, stand up, acting, hosting. And now you've gotten a gig that you couldn't be more right for.
Thank you.
That you're crushing.
Thank you.
That I watch clips of, and you're fucking the. Here's why you're a great host. Hosting to me has always seems like a very. Very challenging. The first time I ever auditioned for a host thing,
we auditioned for hosting together, and they put us in the room together, which was the most awkward fucking thing in
Super
the world.
Super awkward. And we had,
like, come on in, Adam. Just watch Jay. And then, Jay, you watch Adam. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, we're buddies.
There's the Ryan Seacrest hosts.
Presentational.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the guys that go, oh, I can grab a beer with that guy afterwards.
Yeah.
But he also is giving me all the info I need.
Yeah.
And setting up the rule and whatever... You just have such a great balance of both where you still, and even watching these clips, I was like, oh, that's still, like, I know you well. So I'm like, oh, that's,
yeah,
You weren't compromising.
Yeah, you're not faking it.
Yeah,
it's that was the hardest thing, because the copy that they give you, you know, the stuff you have to read, and the stuff they show on the show, it's just a tiny bit of what I actually had to do. The first episode I came in, they gave me
explain the show for people. That
oh yeah, so Ellen's it. Design Challenge. It's on HGTV.
And this isn't Ellen Cleghorn from SNL in the early 90s.
It's Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres. Yeah. One of the most powerful people on the planet picked Jay Monopar to host her first follow-up show.
Her first is that your first,
Prince, Oprah, Ellen. I put all these people in the same sentence.
Oh, yeah. She's a house. I mean, she's so powerful. It's crazy. But and apparently she handpicked me, which was an unbelievable honor. You know,
that's unreal, like, dude.
That's crazy.
Because I looked up to her stand-up-wise.
Oh, she's still so influential. She was, if you watch some of her stuff, you're like, everyone has done that joke after her. You know, there's a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, it was great. After the first episode, I woke up the next morning. You know, it did really well. It got like 3.9 plus million viewers. It's the biggest
HGTV
premiere,
right?
HGTV, biggest premiere in HGTV
what
history.
Nights, real quick?
So it's Monday nights, 9 o'clock, 8 Central, HGTV. There's 4 more episodes left. The reviews are crazy. The second episode went up 33% from the first episode.
So you wake up from that, which
almost never happens. It's usually huge debut and then huge drop off, and hopefully the drop off,
hopefully it builds up.
Yeah, and it builds back up.
No, we went up 33%, and I woke up the next morning. You know, because you never, you're like, what are they?
You never.
It's
know,
out
dude.
Of your control. Like, I don't know what they're gonna do with me, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't allowed to really shine. I had a job. You know, my job was to propel the forward motion of the show. Right. You know, they even told me at one point, you know, like, we hired you because you're a comic, but we don't want you to be a comedian. That's a mind fuck right there. I don't even know what
that
means.
What do you do with that sentence?
Yeah, so it's just, you have
to... That's the, I love you, but I'm not in love with you.
Yeah,
and you're like, what
right?
the fuck does that mean?
I don't understand. And, you know, you have to ride the line between hitting certain words. You really have to hit certain words very clean, but you can't make it seem like it's canned.
You can't be push salesy, right?
Yeah, you can't be schmacky salesy. So the next morning I woke up and Ellen had sent me this beautiful gift basket at my doorstep with a beautiful, you know, personal note from me. I got a personal note and a gift from Ellen DeGeneres. It was the most, my wife starts crying. My cousin's staying with me. He's crying. I'm like, you're an outdoorsman. You're crying?
Was it all weed paraphernalia? And she goes, you'll never have to look through black dildos to find
never
weed.
Again. Yeah, no, it was an awesome cheese
basket.
That's
incredible, dude.
Yeah, so.
And her, then the note was just so heartfelt and so like.
Yeah, it was real. It was nice. It was great.
Did you cry?
No, I am one of those. You know, I'm a comic, so everything. I'm like, it's all gonna be taken away from me. It's, whatever it is.
That's the mindset.
You can't enjoy your life, you know. But it was a big. I've been hosting for a while, but I didn't. When you get to this level, like, you know, I've hosted. I was going to be the next Dick Clark bloopers guy. I shot that pilot.
Are you
that
serious?
Yeah, and that Dick Clark passed away. And it went away. So we shot the pilot, and it was great and everything. But, that was a small production thing. This, you go on set thinking you're prepared for something. Mm-hmm. This was the biggest production that HGTV has ever done. There is the Warner Brothers executives there. A. Smith, who does everything. There's Ellen's people, and there's HGTV, and all the top people from all these places, and they're all staring at you. And meanwhile, during the first episode, the first thing, I go up in my clothes, they stop me mid-whatever, and they're like, you look too close to the carpenters. Your outfit's too close to the carpenters. I took a shirt off the top Warner Brothers executive. I start wearing his shirt. Wearing his shirt in the first episode, through the whole thing. He's got a shitty t-shirt that says like Jet Tools on it with $2,000 shoes, you know. It's so it just doesn't prepare you. It's so much pressure.
And you're just sitting there while all these people are staring at you like, who the fuck is this girl?
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You're
and
like,
you know they're thinking that.
Yeah, who is this guy? You know, but they don't know the contestants. They think, you know, maybe he knows so much about building and carpentry. Does he have any influence on this? You know, and that's part of the game you have to play too.
And they're thinking thoughts like that, and they're also thinking thoughts that don't matter because they're executives, and they've got to be thinking of. It's their job to think of ways to. I don't know. Is this something we should be concerned with?
I think his shirt is too tight for Middle America.
Right. You know. I know. But these guys, I can't imagine ever doing a show with nicer people. These guys were unbelievably supportive. They came up to me after, you know, during the middle, and they saw that I was a little probably tight, and they were like, "We are not. We are gonna. We have all eyes on you.
just to make you look great. That is our job right here. And that kind of took all the pressure off.
Yeah.
But they give you, you know, before the first episode, I had all my dialogue and stuff. I wake up in the morning at 7 in the morning. They emailed me 7 new pages of fresh dialogue that we're taping in an hour. 7 single-spaced pages
Get
that
ready.
I have to now do.
Yeah.
Right off the box. But it turned out good. And yeah, well, I'm proud of it. I'm happy.
And also, it's I mean, who doesn't... What's the demo for the show?
25 to 54, I believe.
Women.
Well, now a lot of guys are getting into the...
Can I be honest? I watched some of this shit, and I was like, oh, man. Because I'm in the next year going to get a new place.
Yeah.
And...
But you already
about,
have some sweet style going on.
Thank
here.
You.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. Seeing some also just competition shows that are new like this.
Yeah.
And they feel the drama of it and like yeah. The people know what they're doing and the panel who's chiming in with you know their insights on the things people are designing like know what the fuck they're talking about.
Oh, mm-hmm. this show we literally have all, each designer has a lead carpenter and every one of these carpenters also has their own television show. Like they got the best of the best. And then the judges are Christiane Lemieux. She's the executive creative director of Wayfair.com, which is the largest online furnishing dealer in the
Wayfair,
world.
Wayfair, not to be confused with Wayfair.com, which is mm-hmm. the website to order vanilla wafers.
Yeah, or the strawberry, which no one gets unless it's 3 in the morning and you're fucking cocked. and then Amanda Dameron, who's the
definitely from New England, because you said fucking cocked,
fucking
right?
Fucking cocked.
That's a Rhode Island for drunk.
Yeah, right there. So it's the best designers in kind of the world, and the best, you know, Amanda Dameron's the editor in chief of Dwell Magazine, which is the most respected, one of the most respected yeah. interior design magazines, and these guys are awesome. It was so much fun.
Yeah, and here's the thing is, you're. Publicist like sent me a clip of the show, so like I'm watching it, and then when I literally
you got
found
a boner
myself
when I came on, didn't you?
Well, obviously, yeah. I mean, look at those cheekbones. but like when the clip ran out, I was like, oh, what the? I don't yeah. know what happens.
Yeah,
ah!
It's actually an exciting show.
Yeah,
it's
like, totally,
it's,
man.
It's a good show. I love watching. Leonard Robinson texted me last night. He's a comic,
mm-hmm.
and he goes, I'm watching this with my girlfriend. Man, we're halfway through. She's already addicted. Fuck you, Monopart. Now I gotta watch this show forever.
Now I gotta watch you all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And she's like, "Look at me. Going, why I didn't get that job?
Yeah, there's
that's
another
awesome,
guy more
though,
successful than me.
Yeah.
Right. I was on Wildin' Out.
Hey, easy with that black guy impression. You might get walk-ins to
I
shoot
saw
you
your
like 30
clip. No, I saw your clip online where you do a black impression,
yeah.
and then a guy. Fucks with you, and he made you keep saying it.
Yeah,
that's some weird sex shit. Say it again.
Well, that was the if you haven't seen this clip, it's on my YouTube page. Just type in Adam Ray deals with crazy heckler. But that was the craziest thing I've ever had to deal with.
Yeah, but well, you know what? I actually like hecklers now because
I love it.
They'll take your show in a direction you never thought it would. I ended up getting a bit the other day. This Russian guy was heckling me at Gotham Comedy Club.
Uh-huh.
I ended up doing 7 minutes on this guy. And I ended up, there was like...
Yeah, I saw that clip you posted.
Yeah, I mean, that was all like, boom, off the cuff.
And so he took you like, hey, say that again. Turn your head around.
Yeah. I ended up doing a bit about like, if you had a Russian grandmother giving you, saying nursery rhymes to you, you know?
Rock-a-bye baby, up the tree top. No leaves, everybody dead.
Yeah.
And I did a whole, and that ended up being a bit that I used.
Yeah, because now you could write a bit like Russian nursery rhymes.
Yeah.
And,
and it ended up being great.
Diddle, the cat in the fiddle. It is Russian, there's no fiddle.
Eeny, meeny, tippity feet. Enough rhymes, go to bed, fuck you.
Yeah. Like
Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty fell, that fat fuck. He should not have been on the wall. It's not his wall. Get off, not your wall.
He fell too close to radiation. He's dead now.
Fucking Chernobyl.
He's got 3 eyes.
That's actually really funny. That's a whole.
Yeah, it turned into a whole bit. And, and you have all these things in your head, like, these weird ideas, these disparate ideas that you don't know where you're going to use. And that's when they pop up. And you're talking about like all these little struggles you go through life as a performer. And you don't know when you're going to, that lesson that you've learned in that weird little bar somewhere.
We end up using everything, man.
Yeah.
We have to. Our body is an instrument.
Oh, I totally I totally understand what you're saying.
We're going to play Soggy.
It's an instrument and you know how to play it, sister.
After this podcast, we're playing Soggy Muffin or Gookie Cookie all together. It's
Wait a minute. Soggy Muffin.
Next on Elton's Design Show.
Gookie Cookie.
It rhymes better than Soggy Muffin, doesn't it?
That's true.
Jay Monopoly, you're the man.
You're the man.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Honestly, I've been wanting to be on this podcast for so long.
Dude,
man.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me?
You listen to it?
Yes. I love it. You've had crazy, crazy guests on the show. And just to be a part of that lineup is such an honor for me.
Well, you crushed it, man.
Yeah, man. Exactly.
I couldn't be happier for you, man. You're one of the nicest, funniest dudes in the biz. And I hope the show runs for fucking 15 seasons, man.
Yeah. Well, I got a 5-year contract, so we'll see what the hell happens.
Dude, but that's unbelievable, man. I mean, one of the biggest comics ever handpicked you. Like,
it was great.
There
was a vetting process too. There was like a month in there where I was like, they were vetting me. They were looking through my whole online everything.
Of course.
Some stuff.
So were you perusing through, being like, I need to get rid of that?
I just email about my friends. Anything that's disparaging, take it down.
Right.
Now.
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing on. I'm a clean cut.
Any Facebook photo albums? Like, sorry, not sorry. 2012. Yeah, Jaymana like, Parcabo pictures.
Get rid of those. His wife's bikini underwear.
We were like trying to find those. Virginia College like stories calling you a racist. Like, all right, don't look that far back.
Yeah, luckily, my college ended up doing a whole spread on me in the alumni.
That's
magazine.
That's awesome, dude.
That. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, then you could show them that if they brought to your attention.
Bam.
Done.
But Jay Monopar on Twitter.
Yeah, at Jay Monopar.
How do you spell that last name?
MONTEPARE. You can find me at jaymonopar.com. Watch Ellen's Design Challenge every Monday. 9/8 Central. It's awesome. The furniture is incredible. It's exciting. You learn a lot, and it's just fun to watch.
So. And finally, fuck Watkins.
Fuck Watkins.
Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, guys.
So that's the show. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore. Because it's here. And it's funny. And I love you.